Hi, my name is Kevin Lee Dazing. I'm 62, where today's date is March 5th, 2020, and we're broadcasting from Las Cruces, which is my location. I'm talking here with Luigi, and sorry, we're not partners or anything.
My name is Luigi. I'm 25 years old. Today is March 5th, 2020. We're in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I'm sitting here with Kevin. I'm just about to get to know him a little bit. So, Kevin, can you tell me about where you grew up?
Well, I was born in Tyler, Texas, back in the last millennium, and we moved quickly to Mesquite, Texas, and I grew up in Mesquite, just a basic middle-class family.
And do you have siblings?
Nope, no siblings. My parents have no siblings. We're all single children, I think.
Huh, small family.
Yes. I have six kids.
Well, now you do.
Yes. Yeah.
What about growing up? Did you have any pets or anything like that in Texas?
I had a cat. Weighed about 25 pounds. Had little stubby legs. And you never denied it any food because it would slap you silly.
What was the cat's name?
Figaro.
Figaro.
Yeah, my father loved opera. And so every Sunday when Mom would go to church, he would throw out the fried Spam or bologna and throw opera records on, and we sit there and listen to opera while we're eating.
You didn't get dragged to church?
Well, I was dragged sometimes, but sometimes my father goes like, Kevin don't look too well. He needs to stay home. And I was like, okay. And I'd be like, yeah, Dad.
So you were playing hooky with your dad.
Yes.
Getting out of church.
That's it.
What was it like growing up in Texas?
Hot. It was the little subtle ways. It wasn't fast. We're not pushing or anything. There's the white picket fences and the American Legion baseball game on Saturday and just going to school. And it was a lot different than it is today. My show and tell for when I was in junior high in eighth grade was my 44 Magnum. And I brought it to school and showed everybody, and everybody thought it was cool, and the principal thought it was cool and everything. And no one said gun or anything like that. Mm-hmm. In high school, everybody had an Easy Rider rifle rack in the back. Half the guys were, drank a couple of drinks out of their pint before they went to school, and we had a good time.
Yeah.
We didn't riot or anything. We're just a bunch of good old boys.
You do a lot of shooting when you were young?
I did some shooting, not a lot. My father was in the military, but he wasn't one of those that, be gung-ho. He just let mm-hmm. me be gung-ho.
Yeah.
I was into ROTC for 4 years in high school, was dressed up as a soldier before that. I had a military mind.
Mm-hmm. Did your dad encourage that when you were growing up?
Oh, yes. We're in the redneck belt. God, mother, apple pie, and all this, and the military. You don't say nothing against the military. And so it was always like that. When I went to join the military, a bunch of us did. We all went down, joined the military, and then I find out, months later, a bunch of others went and more went, so.
So it was a lot of people that you knew going
yes.
in at the same time. How did your parents like it when you told them you were going to join?
I didn't. The Marine Corps called me up, says, we looked at your ASVAB scores and said, we want you to be an air traffic controller. And I said, no, I want to carry a gun and be an infantryman or MP. And they kept saying, no. Well, my ROTC, because I was in command, I got a scholarship appointment to West Point from Secretary of the Army. So I thought, oh, yeah, West Point. Yeah, I'm going to be up there. Well, that didn't work out too well. Me and my big mouth and thinking it's vacation time didn't work out. So I came back, called the Marine Corps up, said, hey.
You still got that?
Going. can I get a gun and go shoot people in Nam? And they're like, no, air traffic control. So I went to the Army and says, hey, I want to shoot people in Nam and carry a gun. That they said, you got a high school diploma? I said, well, yeah. Come on down, son. You can have anything you want.
And tell me a little bit, before we get into that, tell me a little bit about West Point. What happened down at West Point, if you don't
well,
mind?
Well, you go up there and go, okay, this looks great and all this. So on the weekends, I get to go to New York City, party and all this. And this guy with about 20 chins go, you will be a West Point cadet. You will train. I'm like, well, okay, guy. So I said, well, then in summertime, I get to go home, party and all this, and come back in the fall. You will train, train, train. You will never go home. I said, okay. Then I said, where's all the women? And he went, if there's supposed to be women, we will issue you one. You're going to be training. I said, well, okay, I guess I'm going home. So I went home. And
how'd your parents react when you told them you were leaving West Point?
They were like, well, son, you do what you want to do. You know, it's your life. So I went to the Army recruiter. He says, well, you're 17. I said, yes. He says, we need these forms signed by your mom and dad. So I said, okay, I'll go take them over to them. So I went around the corner, signed their names, went back, said, guess what, Sarge? I ran mom and dad, and they signed. And he goes, are you telling me the truth? I said, yes. Would I lie to you? Okay, here. Thank you. And so when I was going to go off, I told my mom. I got ready in the morning, packed my suitcase. I said, I'm leaving. He says, where? I said, I'm going to the Army. She goes, I thought we had a sign for it. No, Mom, they changed the rules. Bye. She said, okay.
Same day you told them, huh? Yeah. Same morning and everything?
No. It was a couple of mornings down.
A couple of mornings before.
Yeah, but it was like they keep thinking, oh, you can get in on S-17 now. Yeah, right.
So where'd you go when you headed out for basic?
I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky. It's home of armor, tanks, and all this. So I took basic training there. Then we walked over to the other side, went to AIT, which is your schooling, and I became a tanker. I went in there as a E4, Spec 4, because I took the test for my MOS and passed it. So no one outranked me, so I was the platoon guide. So I was in charge of the whole thing.
Can you tell us what MOS stands for really quick?
MOS, it's your job skill number. Like a tanker is 19 echo or 19 kilo. Infantry is 11 Bravo. You know, that's just what your MOS is. Everything has a number.
And how did they determine the MOS for you? Do you like take tests and stuff?
No, I took the test for armor for tankers. And since I passed it, that's why I had to go into.
Oh, okay.
So, and I liked it. I like tanks. They don't cry or whine carrying a lot of stuff, like beer coolers, lawn chairs, or anything like that. They go pretty fast. I don't have to walk in the mud. There's an old adage, don't get off the tank. And you about never will have to, unless the thing breaks down. Then you hate it. But I spent my time there. Then from there, I went to Germany. Went to a place called, I want to go to Vietnam, but they're like, no, we don't have tanks anymore. I'm like, okay. So I went to Germany, went to Baumholder, Germany, and spent my time there. Not long, but I spent some time there. I'm supposed to have 4 years. I spent 4 years first time in Germany. But I went there, and when I entered a unit and all this, it was great. My commander found out that you had an appointment to West Point, so I'm going to send you back to West Point next year. I was like, I don't know. I don't think so. No, you are. I said, look, I'm already in E4. I'll probably be E5, E6 soon. I said, I'm going fast this way. Nope, you're going to West Point.
So
okay.
They sent you back to West Point?
Nope. There's an adage that you cannot be married. So I went home on leave, got married, came back. He says, well, you ready for West Point? I said, can I take my wife with me? And that stopped that right there.
You got married to get out of going back to West
Point. Well, I was in love. I knew her for 2 days, and I said, well, this is long enough.
Tell me about her. Tell me about that. Getting married after 2 days. That's crazy.
Not really. It's what happened. We dated in high school at the very end. The girlfriend I had, I hit her head on we had a traffic accident, so she was hurt. So I said, okay. And she kind of forgot about me. I don't know why. But her best friend said, hey, here I am. And so we wrote to each other. And, of course, a soldier's life is a lonely life. So I'm seeing Germany in the wintertime, snow, can't go nowhere. I said, well, you want to get married? Okay. So I came home in summer, say, hi, here I am. Oh, these are the parents. How are you doing? I'm going to marry your daughter.
How did they react to that when you met her parents?
Dad was an old veteran from the Korean War. And he was a cook. So he just kind of like, oh, you're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. No, that's my daughter and all this. Mom was like, can we get her out the door now? You know, she can go with you. So I came back and said, that was it. I'm not going to West Point. But in a few months, I got picked up by military intelligence. And so I went over to military intelligence there. They trained me as an interrogator and then threw me in the field as a major. And I was a Spec 4 in the Army, but I had to dress up and act like a major. And I had IDs, everything. I had my military files saying I was a major, Vietnam, and all this. So I ran around screwing with units.
Yeah, what kind of trouble did you get into? Oh,
a unit be out there in the field, and they'll be like, okay, we got to get into the attack. I go out there like, where are you going, Captain? It's like, well, I got orders to go attack. No, you're not. You're not going. But I'm a major. You're a captain. So my orders go, you stay here, and you park yourself. Okay. Then I would go off, and then like 2 hours later, their colonel would come in like, why aren't you moving out? Well, the major told me to stay here. What major? That would be it. And so I raised hell throughout Germany like that, just telling people, getting counter orders and everything.
That's how you had your fun.
Oh, I had fun. I had fun that way. I'd be out there smoking a cigar with my major sleeves on like, that's it. I'm the man. And I was like, I hope no one ever finds out I'm a Spec 4 because I'm going to catch hell. But I spent about a year.
Nobody ever found out, huh?
No one ever found out. They transitioned me back to tanks. So I was on tanks then again. And I had fun in Germany. We were on the old M60A1s, which were now the younger guys call them dinosaurs. And I'm like, well, you know, we're going 25 miles an hour. We're really flying, you know. But I stayed with them until I finally re-enlisted for Fort Hood. I wanted to stay longer, but my second child was going to be born. I always had them all born in Texas. For some reason, I do that. So I sent her back, got ready to go, and came back to Fort Hood. And I joined the Cav unit, the 2nd and 8th Cav down there. And it was fun. It was a unit that had like 30 tanks and 5 people.
A lot of tanks to go around.
Yes, I walked in there. I was a Spec 5. And the commander goes, oh, my God, you're a Spec 5. We're going to make you sergeant, and you're going to be in charge. I said, wait a minute. He's a Spec 5. He's a sergeant. Why do you need me? He says, he's a PFC. He's a private. He's a PFC. We just gave him the rank so it can look like we got somebody. You're the first real sergeant.
Real Spec 5, huh?
So I was made a platoon sergeant. And he says, these are your tanks. You got 5 tanks here, and you got 4 people. So we would go to the field. It's like, okay, get on one tank. We all go field, play in it for a week. Come on back, park it, get in the next tank. Go ahead, take it out and play with it and come back. And that's how we did things. And we even had 4 companies, and we couldn't fill one. So finally it's like, well, I'm in Delta Company. It's like, no, you're not. Why? Well, it's been deactivated. You're now in Charlie Company. Okay, I'm in Charlie Company. 3 weeks later, no, it's been deactivated. You're in Bravo Company. I'm going like, okay, down I go. But I got a good job then. They found out I could type. And they go, well, we don't need you on tanks. A baboon can run a tank. We need you type and run the headquarters orderly room. So there I am. I'm now in their orderly room going because I can do 2 fingers. And so I had a company commander that still had flashbacks from Nam. He was a helicopter pilot, and he would just disappear. My first sergeant, on Labor Day, his wife came in and said, while you're watching football, here's divorce papers. I'm throwing your bags out on the street. Have a good day.
My gosh.
And so he went to West Fort Bliss into a little trailer home. And so his day was, I'm going to drink all night, find somebody that I want to be with or whatever. And I'm going to sleep late in the morning, hoping somebody comes, knocks on my door, wakes me up so I can go work. And then I'm going off. I went, okay. So I would sit there and people come in because headquarters company's got cooks, medics, mechanics, all this. So head cook come in and said, hey, where's first sergeant? Oh, he's with the medics. Okay, tell him I came in and want to talk to him. Okay, good. Medics come in. Where's first sergeant? Oh, he's with the mechanics down there. Okay, tell him we came in. Mechanics come in. Hey, where's first sergeant? Oh, he's down in supply. He'll be with you later. Okay, tell him I come in. So we have all this done. I would get everything done right. Then I would go out there on break, go out there, knock on his door, chase the woman out, get him dressed, come on top. And as I'm telling him, I said, you're here, you've been here, you talked to this guy, you talked to this guy.
You had to brief him on the runaround.
Yep, brief him on the run. We came in, he would just sit behind his desk. CO would come in like, where you been? Medics. I was in medics, okay. And that's how it goes. Until about 3, 4 o'clock, he would disappear to the NCO club, get drunk again. That's how he did it for about 6 months, and no one knew anything about it.
So you made a joke about a baboon being able to drive a tank. Can you tell me about what it was like driving a tank? Because I don't think many people have ever been inside of one, let alone drive one.
Well, you're inside the hull. You have a gas pedal. You have a brake pedal. And you have a T-bar. And that's it. It's
and
like
the T-bar is used for steering? Is
yeah, that? Used okay. for steering. And then you had a gear shift alongside you. And you threw it in drive, push on the gas, and you just hope it goes. And nothing stops it. I ran over a couple of Opals and Fords, trees, walls. Made a drive-through church one time. Church was about from 1700, and we're coming down a hill, snowy hill. And I was TC at that time. I was up in top in the cupola telling people what to do. And I'm like, slow it down. And driver's like, I can't. I'm like, slow it down. I can't. Steer away from the church. I can't. So we went in one side and right out the other side. And we're stopped there, and I looked at the church. It was founded like 1703 and all this. People came out looking at us, so we all got on back deck, had our picture taken by the town, hopped in, and took off, hoping they'll never know who we were.
My gosh.
Oh, we had fun. We'd go down turnip fields. They'd be out there, turnip fields. And whatever we destroy, there's a referee comes back, says, okay, I'll write you a check for whatever they destroy. So we go like, okay, if we didn't care, we go behind them where they're picking, so it just tears up dirt. But we go like, oh, let's go in front of them. They'll get paid for it. So we just ride right in front. They're all like clapping, going like, this is great. It's we're like going to get a check and not have to work.
It was like Robin Hood.
That's it.
We're out here getting people money.
That's it. It was fun.
So they had to pay for the church, huh?
Yep. Somebody did. I hope they report it.
Do you ever go back and see it?
No. Our motto is don't go back.
Don't go
don't
back.
Don't look for it.
Well, what can you tell me? You know, so you were working for the top guy, right, in the headquarters, and you're keeping him afloat. What happened after that?
Well, they had a change of command, and people got shook up, and they said, you're a tanker. I said, yeah. Well, you need to go back tank. So I went back tanks for about 3 months till it was time to go to Germany again. So I said my farewells, went to Germany, went to Augsburg, did something. They were going to send me Kirchgoins, which is called the Rock, because it's a mountaintop that snows almost every month. And I'm like, no, I'm not. They said, yes, you are. Ha, 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 you are. And I said, no, I'm not. So I made a phone call to Heidelberg, which was personnel, talked to a young lady I knew, and next thing I know, how the hell did you get these orders for Augsburg? I said, Augsburg? You mean the country club of bases? Yeah. I said, just have to know somebody. So we were the only tank unit in a whole place of, they had an antenna outside Augsburg that was a mile in diameter. They used to listen to the Russians, the Hungarians, that they could pick up anything over there. And it was all security, military security in Augsburg, except for this one tank unit. And they're like, well, if we're ever attacked, you're supposed to protect us. Oh, no, we're heading on the road back to France. But so I got sent there, and basically there I stayed on tanks for meanwhile, but we used to have fun. We go to Grafenwehr. Grafenwehr is the big tank range. It's a giant, like, 100-square-mile area, and we shoot our tanks in that. So what I would do is go out there, and they had the big club in the field out there, drinking club, had about 600 people. And the Germans would go there, the Americans go there and that. It's called the Stab and Jab for a nickname. So I would go there, and I would go to German side, find a German my size, and go, come and see here, bitte, because I spoke fluent German. And so I would take him into the latrine. We changed uniforms. So he had American uniform on, I had German uniform, and I would sit with the Germans. And I could be so well entrenched with the Germans that they would, one time one guy came over with an Army field jacket, Army guy, and he's trying to trade for a German parka. Well, their parka's nice. And the German goes, and he's talking to him, says, and German goes, yeah, let me talk to him. So he talks to the first guy, you know, in German that, hey, guy wants to trade that piece of junk field jacket for a parka. Ah! And then next one. When it got to me, they're sitting there saying, you know, telling me in German, yeah, the guy wants to trade that piece of American junk for our stuff. I started laughing. Yeah. I said, yeah, and it probably isn't worth it at all, is it? And they just went, du bist amerikanischer Soldaten? I'm like, yeah. And they thought that was cool. They took me to their club on their base and everything. Oh, God, it was. I did this every night, traded off. One night, finally, I was over on their base. And the drunk truck would come by and go, oh, German, get in. And I would climb in. They'd take me to German base. I'm like, no, I need to go back American base. So I go walking down the road about 5 miles, truck come by. Hey, get in the truck, comrade. Okay, get in the truck. Drive me back German base. So next time, I just ran the woods hiding. So I got back to base. Well, I didn't make too well. I passed out in the grass right in front of our Quonset hut, our barracks. So in the morning, I hear this noise like, hey, sir, there's a rat passed out in front of our barracks. He goes, what? Yeah, some German soldier. He goes, oh, my God, is he alive? Yeah, roll him over. He's like, it's Sergeant D. He goes, what? He goes, and he told me, he says, do you have enough American uniforms to last? I said, I got about one left. I'll keep that.
Oh, my God.
So I would collect uniforms.
So you're having a lot of fun out there.
You have to have fun. If you do not have fun, the Army will eat you up. It will eat you up and spit you out. Mm-hmm. So you have to have fun. And we always kept going, how much more we can push it.
Right. Got to find the limits.
I was telling her when the first time I was in Germany, I was a Spec 4, which is looked like a bird beak rank. And they're black. Well, they want to promote me as I wanted to be promoted. So I came up with the idea of, what about command specialist? You got command sergeant major, takes care of the NCOs. You have command specialist, take care of the enlisted. And so I brought it to my coming commander. He's like, well, I don't care. Do what you want. Okay. So I brassoed the eagles in the middle so they shine like gold with black ground. So I would walk around posts like that. And I would get lieutenants like, come here, soldier. What the hell is that? I'm going like, command specialist. And they go like, what? I said, yeah. Don't you have one? We got one. I'm the command specialist for 168 Armor. Don't you have one in your infantry? And they go, what? I said, yeah, every unit has one. And be like, really? I'm going to have to look into that. Yes, sir, take care, because we take care of the enlisted. Okay, and they would walk off. I'm like, I got over this guy. I would just go on my own. And they allowed me to wear it until I got promoted. So for about 9 months, I was, yep, command specialist. And the sergeant major just looked at it like, why not? What the hell?
Yeah. So when you were in Germany, you said that you had two kids already, right?
Yes.
Did your family come out with you?
Yes, I did. I brought them out, and we would live in we lived in housing the first time I was in Germany. Not housing, but in civilian housing. Mm-hmm. One was an apartment above a barn, which was great, except when they're slaughtering the cows. It got kind of smelly. And that one was the edge of a bomb holder. But it was unique. One time I bought turkey, got turkey Thanksgiving. Germans never seen turkey. So they're all like, well, was ist das? I'm like, turkey. Oh, my God. They brought their electric knife out and everything. They were sitting there like, can we? And I'm like, yeah. So then next Thanksgiving, I bought more turkeys. And so I just spread it out like that. That's like the vineyards out there. When they're picking grapes, anybody can come out there. So me and a bunch of guys would go out to a vineyard, and we would pick grapes all day, get drunk all night, wake up on their picnic benches or whatever in the morning, go back to work on Sunday.
That's too good. So how much longer did you spend in Germany after that?
I spent 8 years total. The second tour I did, I spent 2 years in Augsburg, and then finally our headquarters found out where we were, mm-hmm. and said, well, you don't need to be there by yourself. We're moving you up to another post. And then when I was there, I was like, well, when I was in Fort Hood the first time after I came back from Germany, one of my jobs was NBC NCO, Nuclear Biological Chemical NCO, because they went, well, our last guy is gone. We need somebody to take over. and your IQ is above 5. So what do you want to do? I said, send me schools. So I went to all the schools, came back, and I did that. So when I was in Germany, they went, well, we need another one. We see in your records that you're doing that. I says, okay, so they threw me into that. So I did nuclear, biological, chemical warfare for some time. Then from there, I went became the drug NCO for the whole base, which wasn't too good. You got to carry the little bottles and go over there and say, okay, now your whole unit has to go, you know, pee in a bottle and that. And I was like, you know, oh, I didn't like that too much, but hey, it got me away from my commander.
Yeah.
He was an idiot. You do that in the Army, you'll have a great commander, 18 months or a year with him. Then comes the new commander, which could be an idiot for about a year or 18 months. And a new commander comes in, which could be a great guy and all this. So you just had to go back and forth with him. And this one was an idiot. So I said, well, yeah, okay, I'll be a drug NCO. Why not?
Spend some time away.
That's it.
Makes sense. Sounds like you had some of your best fun in Germany.
Oh, I had best fun in Germany. I had best fun in America. After Germany, I came back to Fort Hood again. I was in the 7th Cavalry, which was great. On June 25th, Custer's last stand, Hal Moore would come over, tell us, hey, you know, 7th Cav, great people, blah, blah, blah. Then we have the day off, and I always kept kidding. I said, God, we should have got our butts kicked more places. We could have more days off. But I stayed with them. I became a Yukov trainer, which in those days, we're getting the M1s in now.
That's an Abrams tank, right?
That's the new Abrams tank. I was on the XM1 project when I was at Fort Hood first time, second time, we got the tanks in. So they had this giant, like three 18-wheeler trailers together, which had the computers and simulators in there. And so you could go in there and simulate tank gunnery, like you're in a battlefield and you can shoot the little lasers out and all this. And I was the only one qualified to run it. So right in the summer when it's like 110 degrees, it's like, let's go over to it because they had to keep it at 70 degrees at all times for the computers. So we're like, okay, let's train. Let's throw in some jams in the cassette there, listen to some AC/DC, and let's go play. And we do that all day.
Oh, my.
And no one could go over there like, well, you can't do it. It's like, yes, I'm the only one trained. I have to train these people.
You have to train,
it's
yeah.
Like, okay. So I got out of there. I had a good job. I got to run a – I need some extra – yeah, extra money always comes because, boy, you know, when you're earning $127 a month, it's not that much. But when I was at Fort Hood, I got a job managing a strip joint. So that was something that you should never do.
Not a good time?
I said, I've seen all the movies. This should be fun. Oh, no. Stealing, yelling, not coming in. Music's too loud. She don't like me. He doesn't like me and all this. But I got through to command because command had to pass it because I told the first sergeant CO, I'll have two seats up front for you anytime. Okay, we'll be there. So I did that. And finally, after I left Fort Hood, I went to recruiting duty. I put in for recruiting duty way back in my career. I said, yeah, I want to be a recruiter. And they kept saying, you're a tanker. You got bonus money. You can't be a recruiter. Okay, so then they called a bunch of us in, about 200 people, into room. They go, okay, named off about 150 people. You're going to Germany. So I was there. I was platoon sergeant with a tank commander. And we're going like, okay, I guess we're going to Korea. Named off about 35 of us. You're going to Korea. I'm like, okay, where are we going? They named off a few other places to find. We're the two left in there. I'm like, hey, sir, did you forget us that? And his platoon sergeant came over and started laughing, like, ah, they're the recruiters. Ah! I was like, oh, my God, time has ended for us.
Yeah. But so that was after how many years?
Let's see. I went there in 86, so that was after 11 years. So he put me in recruiting. I went to Baton Rouge, where everybody has at least 3 kids or a crime record. So, but you'll find out things in there. It's like, yeah, you can get around it. I would go in DA's office like, hey, I'm trying to put Johnny in the Army, but you got him on 3 possessions of coke and selling weed and all this. And he goes, is he going to the Army? Yes, I get it. Is he never coming back? I said, I'll send him to Germany. Hey, his record's gone. Put him in. I'll sign off.
Just like that.
Just like that. I'm like, okay. So we would do things like that. Recruiting is an unusual place. It's supposed to be, you know, all professional people in that. I used to go in there. At 5 o'clock, they tell me, get on out. I was like, why? No, just get on out. Well, one night I came in late. I found out the back office had a mattress in it. I'm like, what's that? Until I found out the girl came in there and said, oh, I've been living here for 3 months till I get shipped out. I'm like, really? Okay. Have a good time. Recruiting was so crooked. It was the most crooked thing I ever seen. We were successful. I got tons of letters from the chief of staff saying thank you for putting all these people in. But there's people that can't make it, and they'll try anything. We had people just disappear. But we used to have fun. We have a big old, every year we have a battalion get-together. So one year we decided to take the commander's room, and we glued all his stuff to the ceiling. So when we went in there, it was like, oh, my God, what was that? One other time we had the hotel take all the cribs and put it in his room because we said that's the babysitting place, so he couldn't get in. We just mess with people left and right. But after recruiting, I know time's getting there. I went to 3rd Cav. In fact, I was in advanced NCO school, non-commissioned officer school, for the Marines. And about 3 days before it ended, they came up to me and said, hey, you three Army guys, you need to go back to your units. The Iraq just invaded Kuwait. We're going to war. And they said, since you're the senior one, you get to pick your place. They said, we got Fort Polk, Fort Riley, or Fort Bliss. I'm going like, oh, my God, Fort Riley? Nothing's flatter out there than anything else. I said, Fort Polk, I do not like swamps. I've been stationed there for a while. I said, I'll go to Fort Bliss. I said, is it in Milltown or something? I said, yeah, there's tons of people around there, so you're small. So, okay, so I went there, joined up with 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, and off we went. We shipped on over there, and the war was fun. The war was fun. I was a tanker until we went over the border. We still haven't attacked yet, but we just went over the border. And then they said, you're a sniper, aren't you? I said, yeah. So they said, okay, you're a regimental sniper. You get in the lead vehicle. And here, we got a guy for you, Jeremy Stewart's going to be your spotter. I said, okay. And they said, here, sign the papers. I said, papers for what? Oh, you own him. He's your property. If he gets lost or something, we'll come after you. I'm like, what? He says, yeah, we don't want him. You got him. So we went through the war like that. And at the end of the war, it's funny, was I'm a souvenir collector. So the uniform I had on was a Soul American uniform again. I put everything in the track, and all my duffel bags and my backpack was Iraqi stuff. And one duffel bag weighed about 160 pounds. So I would, and being a senior NCO, I would carry it up to the line, and they go, okay, privates, get their bags, put it over there in the truck. And you see the guy going, oh, I can't get it. So this went all the way through to at the airport. And so at the airport, I'm dragging it to customs, and the guy says, oh, I need to see in your bags. I said, no, you can't. You won't. He says, why? I said, because I pack these things, and if I unpack them, we'll be here all year to get them repacked. He says, I got to see something, Sarge. I said, okay, here, look in the very back of my rucksack, and you see a little box there, you can look in it. Okay, so he did that. And this MP comes over, here, let me grab your bag, Sarge. He grabbed it, jerked, and fell on it. And he's like, what the hell's in it? And of course, my men behind me, it's a tank. He's bringing a tank back. He's like, he goes, I don't care, just get it on.
Too much.
So we came back from there, and I spent my final tour with 3rd Cav, and I never saw a tank again. I came back, the command sergeant major for regiment says, you're now the regimental's color sergeant. That's in the Cav unit, that's very high up, very extreme, because not everybody gets it. Not everybody can be part of it. So he made regimental color sergeant. So I did that. I was the aide to the colonel. I was the sergeant major's aide. I guess I was the spell checker and everything else. I was the unit historian because I talked about history, and the colonel goes, you know history? I said, yeah. I'm going to make you a unit historian. I said, no, I can't. It has to be an officer. Who do I talk to? I said, you can call Center of Military History. So about a week later, he says, you're it. You're now the second enlisted historian in the Army. I'm going, okay. Then public affairs came up, and he says, you're now the public affairs officer. I'm saying, but I want me to make a phone call. Okay, I'll take it. I got the UTEP Miners to put our logo on their helmets and have calf days. I had my own press box, everything. And the Post was mad because Post says, it has to be the Post on it. I said, well, then you go tell Coach Lee to take it all off and, you know, forget about us. And they're like, okay. So I would do all that. So then after a while, I went into second squadron, and I became their NCIC of their headquarters. So I ran that. And my last job, which I never saw, was I was the ammo NCO, because about a year left, General Taylor came down from Corps and says, hey, how's Sergeant Dazing doing? And they went, yeah, is he running a tank company or something? They went, he's not there. We got him as the NCIC of headquarters. And General goes, there's no such position. Okay, you get him in a tanking position. So they ran back, found a guy that was retiring as ammo NCO. Says, how about you wear civilian clothes, hand out basketballs in the morning, and you can do that until you retire. Okay, so he went there, and they said, now you're the ammo NCO, but never go down there. So I called the young sergeant and said, you're God, you're in charge, don't ever call me up unless you want to get promoted, and that's it. And I went back to my job. So I had a good career. I did everything I wanted in the Army. You know, I think back of it that maybe if I did go West Point, would I have retired as a colonel or would I have retired in Leavenworth? I don't know, but I had a good time. There's some mistakes, but you just continue on from them.
That's great. Well, hey, thank you very much for talking with us today. And
well, thank you
sharing
for having
your stories.
Me here.
Appreciate it.
I guess we're out of time.
Just about.
Okay. Well, got any last questions?
I got one last question. What do you think? You said you still work with veterans today.
Yes.
What do you think is the most important change you'd like to see for veterans coming back home?
The acceptance of the civilians that they're not a bunch of PTSD killers or people that are going to go insane on them. I'm the DAV district commander for all Southern New Mexico, and I'm also a veteran service officer. And I go through benefits for them all the time, and most of them are PTSD. They don't have bad PTSD. We all got PTSD. I even got it. You know, the little quirks here, like dragging the McDonald's counter man over the counter. No. But we have it in certain amounts. But the civilian people do not need to be afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us go, okay, I got it. I'm going to sit back while just rest, and I'll come back. I'll be best thing you ever had. And that's what we need to do. The VA is getting to be put together pretty well now. Our veterans can go anywhere now and get taken care of. I had a good friend just found out he had cancer. And in 10 days, they got him an appointment with the doctor and everything to take care of his cancer. And
that's
he was
great.
Like, it was amazing. I thought I'm going to have to wait 6 years or I'm dead before it happens.
Yeah, that's what people were used to, right?
Yeah, that way it was. But now things are changing.
That's good to hear.
It always changes. At the end of Vietnam, it was like, who cares about you? Get out of my face. I was called a baby killer and spit at and all this. When we came back from Desert Storm, we had the victory parades and kids coming up like, sign my T-shirt, sign my book, you're a hero and all this. Now we're back to nothing. You know, well, Afghanistan and Iraq were protracted wars, which there wasn't an end date.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see where they celebrate and take care of us.
Well, hope it keeps getting better.
Oh,
thank you for
will.
Speaking with us today.
Thank you very much. Good to see you. Take care.